This week is Parshas Tetzaveh. This year is an unusual year. Usually Parshas Tetzaveh is either Parshas Zohar or it's what else is it? It's usually Parshas Zohar. But this year we have a year, it's a leap year, so we have just an ordinary Parsha. It's not Shkolim, it's not Zohar, it's not Parsha Chodesh, it's not Parsha Spara. Okay, so let's discuss. The pasuk begins, V'yatot tetzaveh es b'nei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned. Parshas Tetzaveh is usually the week of Zayin Adar. We discussed this week. Zayin Adar is the Petira of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's also the Leda, it's also the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. And it usually falls out in the week of Parshas Tetzaveh. I think both the Leda and his Mitsa are both really mentioned. Mitzad Echad, his name is absent. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is absent in the Parshas Tetzaveh because Moshe was Niftar. The common reason why Moshe Rabbeinu's name is missing in Parshas Tetzaveh is because Moshe said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Mocheini na misifrcha asher kosavta, if you will not forgive Klal Yisrael, then erase me from your Sefer." So the words of a tzaddik are fulfilled afilu al tanai. What?
He's saying that in Kisisa.
Yes. So that's the question. If Moshe Rabbeinu said it in Parshas Kisisa, why then is his name missing in Parshas Tetzaveh? So because since Moshe was Niftar and during the time of Parshas Tetzaveh, the Sidra, Zayin Adar, always falls out during Parshas Tetzaveh. In the week of Parshas Tetzaveh.
Was it this week?
Yes, it was this past, was it Tuesday? This past Tuesday.
Yeah.
It was Tuesday, Zayin Adar. The week of Parshas Tetzaveh. In the week of Parshas Tetzaveh, usually that's why we even mentioned, and even in the year, when it comes to yard sites and birthdays, we generally, in the leap year, we follow Adar Sheni. One of the reasons why the observing of the Petir of Moshe by some, by many, is done in Adar Rishon is because since Parshas Tetzaveh is always Adar Rishon, and in Parshas Tetzaveh Moshe's name is omitted, is not mentioned, and that's why it was by design. By design, it's not in Parshas Tetzaveh, because since Tetzaveh will always fall out in the week of Zayin Adar, so in this week, in order to make mention that Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer with us, therefore we his name is not mentioned specifically in this week. In this Shabbos, we don't say you don't say Tzidkoscha on this Parshas Tetzaveh. There's more of an need to have kavana when we say Tzidkoscha than on a regular Shabbos. And one of the reasons why we say Tzidkoscha on a regular Shabbos is Tzidk Hadin, because it was during the time of Mincha on Shabbos when Moshe Rabbeinu was Niftar. Therefore, as a constant reminder of the Tira and the Avelus of Moshe Rabbeinu, every single Shabbos Mincha we say Tzidkoscha. But Lachas Kavakam with this Shabbos, when we daven Mincha and we come to Tzidkoscha, we should have extra kavana, because this Taka is the week when Moshe Rabbeinu was Niftar. He was Niftar on Tuesday, and Parashat Tetzaveh does not mention his name because of that reason. But Mitzarech, I just want to mention is, even though Moshe's name is not mentioned, explicitly, but his name is mentioned, he's mentioned in a more pronounced form. V'ata Tetzaveh. You. Here Hashem speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu directly. Where do we see in the entire Torah? It's almost non-existent. In the Torah, it's always Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Leimar. Hashem always speaks to Moshe in an indirect way. Here in Parashat Tetzaveh, it's Ve'ata. There's more of a chavivus of speaking directly to Moshe. Why is that so? Simple. Because Zayin Adar is also the day when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. This is also the week of a great Simchon Klal Yisrael. We mentioned this past Tuesday that some people fast on Zayin Adar, and it's the middle of the Chevra Kadisha to have a very big Suda on Zayin Adar, not either after the fast or during the middle of the day, because the truth is Zayin Adar is a bittersweet day. It's the time of Moshe's Petira, but it's also the Zman of the birth, the Leda of the Moshiach Nishel Yisrael. And both of those elements are really expressed in the Parsha. The name is not mentioned, it's a sad thing, but yet Parshas Tetzaveh has the Maila that his name is pronounced, and Moshe, the person, is emphasized, V'ata, you Moshe Rabbeinu Tetzaveh, Hashem gives Moshe Rabbeinu a greater degree of emphasis. And that is also a limit Muslim, we only know, when it comes to people who leave this world, unfortunately more often than not when they are alive, we don't appreciate that. And when they're not here anymore, when they're missing, is first when we begin to appreciate what we no longer have. You see that idea in this week's parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu, his name is not mentioned. And when his name is not mentioned, suddenly Moshe Rabbeinu's value, his importance is pronounced that much more. It's atah, you, the person. What the person means to us. The name is not so important, the person is more important. It's a very powerful limud Musa that we should take advantage, that we should appreciate what we have, because unfortunately when we don't have something is real is when we appreciate it a bit more. Yeah. Was born on Shabbos? Possibly. I didn't see that. It's possible. That's possible. That's an interesting idea.
Sometimes they consider these two parshas together, so with that, Moshe Rabbeinu's the beginning of the previous parsha, and therefore they don't count
Zosavrata. They don't count 50. That's a different issue of Gan Parshios. How many parshas are there in the Torah? 53, 54. The Zohar says there are 53 Gan. Problem is there are 54. So what happened? Where did the Zohar? Where do we go off? So there are many answers. One is Vinsamich is one parsha. Some say the Zayis HaBracha is not called a parsha because we only learn on Shabbos. One answer is that we don't. That really parshas Truma Tetzav is one parsha. Just like we learn Vayakal Pekudei, we learn it sometimes together. Really, Truma Tetzav is one parsha. That's why Moshe's name is. It's really Moshe's name is mentioned because he's mentioned parshas Truma. But we break it up. This week we only learn a half a parsha. Last week we learned the half a parsha, and this week we learned the half a parsha in honor of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, that's a different topic. So let's go to another idea.
I think last year, maybe since last year, you said it. Machayinam Sifracha. Yeah. It's Sefer Chav.
Sefer Chav, the 20th parsha?
20th parsha.
I didn't say this, and that's the Tzav, is the 20th parsha of the Torah?
Yeah.
Machenino. Okay. I don't think I said that's very interesting.
25, 12 and Moshe's, and now 8 and
it's 25th, not the 20th.
Okay, let's go to another idea. We have here in this week's parasha the Atot Titzaveh Es B'nei Yisrael. We have over here what appears to be a commandment. You shall command the B'nei Yisrael V'yikhu Elecha Shemen Zayiz Zoch Kosis Lamor. You have to prepare for yourself special oil. Zoch, as Rashi says, it has to be kosis lamaor, v'le kosis lamanachos, no impurities whatsoever. It should be oil that is of the utmost, the highest quality. It's a command. Hashem is telling Moshe, I'm commanding you, this is what shall be done. You shall tell Klal Yisrael to get the oil, they shall bring it to you, you shall give a haskama, you shall put the chasima, your seal on these containers of oil, so it can be used for the menorah. In Parshas Emor, Parshas Emor explains, Divrei Torah Nin B'Mokim Echad V'Ashidin B'Mokim Acher. Sometimes the symbol and understanding of a pasuk is not known. You have to go to another location to gain greater insight. In Parshas Emor, we have all of the Moadim. After the Moadim, we come to Chanukah. Chanukah is also one of the Moadim. Right? We go through all the Moadim, and then we come to Vaidavar Shel Moshe Leimar, Tzav Es B'nei Yisrael, V'ichu Elecha Shemen Zayizoch Kosis Lamor L'Halos Ner Tamid. Okay, it's almost come out word for word identical to what it says over here in Parshas Tetzaveh. So Rashi on Pasuk, this Pasuk in Parshas Emor, Perikov Dal, Pasuk Aleph, writes, he comments, Tzaves B'nei Yisrael, Zo Parshas Mitzvas HaNeros. Here in Parshas Emor is where we're being commanded for the first time to light the Neros. U Parshas V'Ato Tetzaveh Loi Nemro Ela al haseder meleches hamishkan. It's not the command. That's only part of the order of the details of the mishkan. Lefareish tsorech hamenor. What the menorah means. Rashi obviously is preparing himself for the challenge. What do you mean? It's not a command. It says the word titzaveh. The atoyu Moshe titzaveh command. What more do you possibly want? That word titzaveh is a very powerful word. V'chein mashma. I'll tell you what the pasuk really means. The atoyu Moshe sofcha litzavos es b'nei Yisrael al kach. The end will be, not now, not today. You should just keep in the back of your mind that the time will come when you get to Parshas Emor. The time will come when you will command Klal Yisrael concerning the lighting of the menorah, and you'll tell them that the oil that you need for the menorah has to be Shemen Zayizach. fascinating insight. Parshas Emor, Rashi there is coming to give us Pshuta Shol Mikra on what it means, the pasuk over here in Parshas Tetzaveh. It's not a command right now. I just want to give you some advance warning of what's going to be at a later point in time. Very, very rare do we have such a thing like this in the Torah, where you have what it seems to be a command, and yet, based upon analysis of the Chamish Eichum Shei Torah, we know that it's not a command. It's a preparation that the command is going to come at a future point in time. Why is it that this idea is being presented specifically when it comes to the preparation of the menorah, the Shemen Zayizach? And the answer is very simple. When it comes to every area of life, you have to do your hishtadlus. When the time comes, you do what you need to do. But when it comes to Jewish education, when it comes to Talmud Torah, it's a different league. The lining of the menorah, according to all of the opinions you can cite, numerous Maimari Chazal, represents the study of Torah. Lighting of the menorah, Aaron, the one who lights the menorah, he represents the Rebbe. Lahalos ner tamid, he has to lighten up the Talmidim in the Or HaTorah. Ad shetei hashalheves oile ma'alein, you have to teach a Talmud until the Talmud can stand on his own. The Talmud can learn on his own, the Talmud can go forward and can teach on his own. The entire topic, the entire discussion of Parshas Tetzaveh is all about Talmud Torah. And the parsha begins, V'yata Tetzaveh, Rashi Parshas Emor. We're not even up yet to enrolling your child in school. We're not even there yet. When your child will be 3 years old, you'll figure out, you'll go and you'll call up an administrator and say, can you please accept my child into your yeshiva? We're not up there. We got 3 years to go. But you should know, V'yata Tetzaveh, you already have to start planning. When the inyan of Talmud Torah, Jewish education, is so important, is so sensitive, it's so critical, the degree of planning is unique. The planning is way, way in advance. Now, Hashem already says in Parashas Tetzaveh, not now, but you should know the time is going to come when this is what you're going to have to instruct your children to do, instruct Klal Yisrael to do in order to light the menorah. There's a preliminary stage, a preliminary tzivui, to impress upon us that the critical nature of what is involved in hachana for Talmud Torah. You have to plan to plan. It's not just the plan, you have to make all the arrangements way, way in advance to consider all the possibilities. Okay, let's go to another idea. There are two things here in the beginning of the parasha where Moshe is instructed to do. Number one, he tells you, Moshe, Tetzaveh b'nei Yisrael, and tell them exactly what to do with regard to the Navikhwe Lecha Shemin Zaizaka Sisla Morla Halos Ner Tamid, the Oel Moe, Mikhlitzla Parecha Sherlois Yaro, who will arrange Oso Aharon. You, Moshe, you're not going to be doing this. This is not for you to do. The one that's going to make all of the arrangements is going to be Aaron Akoyin. But you, Moshe, you have to make that command. Yaroch Oso Aaron Uvonov Ne Erebogov Ne Hashem Chukasalom Dorosa Me Es Bene Yisrael. Okay? Interesting. Moshe, you're not going to do it, but you're going to be the one that's going to be commanded to tell Aaron what to do. We could ask the question, why couldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself speak to Aaron? We do know that throughout the Torah, Moshe and Aaron were equal, and there are a number of examples where HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke directly to Aaron and told Aaron what to do. Yet, here when it comes to something which Aaron himself is going to do, he was not told to Aaron, he was told to Moshe, and Moshe will instruct Aaron. The next parasha, the next section, Perikov Ches, the Atah. And again, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, for a second time, hakreiv eilecha es Aaron achicha, bring him near to you, v'yesbon avito, mitoch b'nei Yisrael lechahanu li, aharoi nodav aviyu elozor v'yisrael b'nei Aaron, and I want you to make for them the big day kodesh. V'yositza v'day kodesh Aaron achicha lechavod l'sufaris, and you're going to make the clothing for your brother and for your nephews. Again, why couldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu speak directly to Aaron and tell Aaron, you're the Kohen Gadol, you're wearing the clothing, you know what to do, let me tell you what to do, let me tell you the clothing, well, let me tell you exactly how to go about this. Why is it specifically in regard to the lighting of the menorah and in regard to the wearing of the Bibli Kohuna, which were things that were Shaykh Ach Verak to Aaron HaKohen? Was Aaron HaKohen not directly spoken to, but was only given over the information indirectly through Moshe Rabbeinu from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the answer is as follows. Moshe Rabbeinu, clothing, what are clothing? Clothing is kavod ul sifar. So go backwards. Wearing clothing is beauty, something which brings beauty. if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would Aaron would be the one that would instruct his children how to what type of clothing to wear, this would have an appearance of there would be no gabedavar. You can't give yourself kavod. That is the ultimate violation of kavod. Kavod, the definition of kavod is when someone else, an outsider, recognizes, appreciates your qualities. You cannot sing your own praises. If a person sings his own praises, this is pure gaiva. Since the essence of wearing the clothing is l'chavod l'sifares, even though it would be a direct command from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Aaron, this is the clothing that I want you to wear. I want you to wear a choshen, an ephod, an eel, a tzitz, and for your children, I want them to wear beautiful mishpitzos, the ksaynes, and v'chulu v'chulu. Even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving the command, it just does not look right. It does not look right that a person on his own dresses up himself in the most beautiful clothing. It gives himself kavod and tiferes. The only way you can receive kavod and tiferes is if someone gives it to you. Therefore, it had to be specifically, precisely through someone else. And what is the proof to this? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, even though Moshe Rabbeinu was not privileged to be a kohen and to serve in the Beis Hamikdash, but there was an exception. The first 7 days of the Milun, the Chanukah Samishkan, Chazal tell us, Moshe, even in this week's parasha of the Milun, Moshe Rabbeinu was the serving Kohen. Aaron and his children were guests. The one that did the Avodah was Moshe Rabbeinu himself. And Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe is the Kohen, so you would expect Moshe should at least wear big day kahuna. At least he should get dressed up like a kohen hedyot. And you would imagine that on this occasion Moshe should wear the big day kohen gadol. Yet Chazal said that when Moshe served in the Mikdash, he wore a beged lavan. He wore the simplest garment possible. Nothing, not the mishpitz, not even the type of big, the four garments that were worn by the kohen hedyot. There was no avnet, there was no... nothing special. The simplest white garment alone was what Moshe Rabbeinu wore. Why is that so? The answer is, since the clothing that Moshe that were given to the Kehanim are l'chavod l'sifares, and Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that has transmitted this information, how would it look to Klal Yisrael if Moshe Rabbeinu was wearing these clothing? People would say, you invented these clothing for yourself, since for the next first 7 days you're going to be the one that's going to be doing the Avodah, and even so therefore, so you said so therefore you may believe you, I'll make the clothing for Aaron and his children after the 7 days, but at least for the first 7 days I get to wear the clothing for myself, in order that there should be no appearance of anything improper. Moshe Rabbeinu, the first 7 days when he did the Avodah, he wore a beged lavan pashut. Nothing, not even like what the Kohen Hedyot wore. Absolutely nothing. Aaron, who is the only one who are nene from the Big Day Kohuna, l'chavod l'sifares, he did not receive this communication with Kadosh Baruch Hu. He only received it from a secondary source from Moshe Rabbeinu. That's one example. Let's discuss the other example. The other example is the menorah. The Chazal tell us the menorah, Gemara is the question, why do we need a menorah in the Mishkan? Do we really need the light of the menorah? V'haloi, for 40 years in the Midbar, Klal Yisrael travel by the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by the Amud Ha'esh. So Hashem is able to provide fire, light. Why do we need to go light our own menorah when we have that Amud Ha'esh? So the Gemara says, you're right, it's not because we need light in the Mishkan. The Mishkan was illuminated through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an Eidos Shehashchina Shara B'Yisrael. It's not for illumination, it's a testimony that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in Klal Yisrael. Now, the 40 years when Klal Yisrael was in the Midbar, and whose Zechus was their light in Klal Yisrael? In the Zechus of Aaron. The Amud Ha'esh was in the Zechus of Aaron. So look at this. How would it look if Hashem would come to Aaron and say, Aaron, since you are the one that will light the menorah for 40 years, and it's going to be passed down to your children, Aaron's going to light the neros, how would it look if I'm going to instruct you to teach you the laws of the menorah, and how to light the menorah, and what kind of oil to use? Part of the instruction is the most fundamental portion, the most fundamental part of the menorah is people are going to ask, why do we need a menorah? Why do we need the menorah in order to give illumination in the Mishkan? The halayah for 40 years in the Midbar, the next 40 years, are we going to exist through the Amud Ho'esh? And in whose zechus is the Amud Ho'esh? In my zechus! In my zechus! Aaron's going to go give a shir to Klal Yisrael. I have received a revelation from Kodesh Baruch Hu, that we're going to have a menorah, and I'm going to light the menorah. And don't think the reason why we're going to light the menorah is because we need the illumination in the Mishkan, because we don't need illumination, because in my zechus, in my great merit, we have the Amud Ho'esh for 40 years. That doesn't sound nice. And therefore, the reason why we have the menorah is because Eidu Shashchina Shara B'Yisrael. It doesn't look right. That's gaiva. You can't go give yourself praise. The whole essence of the menorah requires the explanation that it's not to give light, because light we have in the zechus of Aaron. Therefore, Aaron, it would be improper for Aaron to be the one that would receive the instructions on exactly how to light the menorah. It had to only come through Moshe Rabbeinu. So we have over here these two things are juxtaposed, they're right next to each other in the beginning of the parasha. These are the only two things where it says this in the entire Torah. The Atah, you Moshe, instruct Aaron concerning the lighting of the menorah, and the Atah, you Moshe, bring your brother close and instruct him concerning the wearing of the garments. Why is it that only these two things, the Atah, you Moshe, and not, I'm speaking only to you. Everything else in the Torah, I could have said the same thing to Aaron. And indeed, sometimes indeed Hashem does say these some of the halachas to Aaron. But it's precisely these two things, the Atah. I only can tell it to you, I cannot tell it to Aaron. Aaron's going to do it, and you're not going to do it. You want to know why? Because of chshad. Because it just does not look right. How would it look for Aaron to go dress himself up in beautiful clothing, l'chavir l'sefaris? How would it look for Aaron to go explain to Klal Yisrael that the menorah is not for light? Because we have light, we have the Amud Ho'esh, which comes in yours truly, in my zechus. That's why we have light. How would that look to Klal Yisrael? We have no tam. Therefore, the Atah, it only can come from Moshe to be transmitted over to Aaron, these two specific things. The Liman Musar is that in life, Alachas Kama Kama, any time you do see the whole essence of the beginning of Parashas Tetzav, any time you see there's something in a situation where there's a possibility that someone's going to suspect that you're doing it for an ulterior motive, you got to be super careful. V'hi Yisem Nikiyim Me Hashem Umi Yisrael. A person has the obligation to distance himself to the utmost extreme, that no one should suspect that you're doing something for your own benefit and you're doing anything of chashad. This is the essence of chashad. This is the beginning of the parsha. The atah titzaveh, the atah hakrev. Only Aaron. You can tell Aaron about the clothing, but I can't tell Aaron about the clothing, because how is it going to look? He's dressing himself with chavilus tefaris. Only you can tell Aaron about lining the menorah. Aaron can't go tell everyone about lining the menorah that he got the communication from Kadosh Baruch Hu, because how would it look for him to tell the world that we don't need the light? I'm the source of light in this world, Aaron. That's why it had to be precisely the Atah. That is the opening message of this week's parsha. Okay, let's go to another idea. Okay, we have over here the ephod. The ephod is a very, very unique garment. Rashi, you can see, Rashi cannot dedicate half the Rashis in this week's parasha are devoted almost to the ephod. Long elaboration, twice, even three times. First, when it says in opening the Atah, he tells you about the different types of clothing. Ephod, oh, let me tell you about the ephod. And then when it gets to the actually making of the ephod, all again the ephod. And then when it comes to the choshen, which is attached to the ephod, nochemo, Rashi goes to town. Rashi struggles. Rashi elaborates their pictures. The ephod is a very complex garment. Basically, Rashi says it's a sinar. It's some type of garment which goes along the back of the person, the lower portion of the person's back, and wraps around with shoulder straps, which attached are the two stones, the avnei shoyam, which have chains attaching it to the choshen, and the lower portion of the choshen is tied with treles to the back portion of the ephod. It's a very unique garment, and Rashi describes it, and every chumash today has a picture of it, and the chumash Rashi in the article has made a beautiful illustration of what is the ephod. Rashi twice in his commentary says something very interesting. Let me read you his exact words. When the parasha begins,
the consultant discusses
the nature of the ephod. What is the mechaper and what exactly? But Rashi, in describing the basic portion of the ephod, he says as follows: the asu es ha'efa. Now let me go back to a previous pasuk. Ve'efa. Okay, pasuk dalet. Beginning of the parasha, perik chav ches pasuk dalet. They thought lo shamati v'lo matzasi b'raisa perish tavniso. Rashi says, you know what? I don't even know what it looks like. I cannot tell you any source exactly what it looks like. V'limi oimerli. My heart tells me. Shuchagur lo me'achayrav. It's a garment which is girded from behind. Rochboy kiroichav gav ish. Its length, its width. Sorry, its width is the width of the back of a person. Kamin sinar. It's like an apron. Shekoyrin. He has a French word. I do not know who this word is. Shechoygrois hasoros. Kishereichvois al hasusin. It was commonly worn by women, women of nobility. Women of nobility when they would ride horses. And just in case you may just forget about these words of Rashi, when Rashi again on the next page, V'yosu'es ho'efod, Rashi says, don't forget what I told you on the previous page. Let's make no mistake about what the ephod really is. Rashi, one more time, Rashi on the next page says, V'yosu'es ho'efod, let me jump down over here. Okay, pasuk vav. In Basi Lefarish, you want to find the poor words of Rashi. Lechakach, I'm jumping down. Lechakach ani koseiv maaseyem kemoshu l'mal yaretz hakaribov yachach farish. Okay, ha'efod osui kemin sinar shel noshim. It's very curious why Rashi has to repeat this again. That it's an apron that's worn by women, roichvois susim, who ride on horses. And it's interesting that in the previous Rashi says sorois. The word he chose was sorois, women of nobility. And here Rashi uses the word stam noshim. I don't know the answer why Rashi changed from sorois to noshim, but basically it means it's an apron worn by women of nobility or made by the average woman when they ride a horse. So that means to the observer, when you see, now by the way, there was a legend. I remember hearing this years ago. There's a legend that Rashi, when he was writing the commentary on this psukim, he really had no clue what the ephod was. He had all of his sources, and as he was sitting on a bench, on a park bench, and writing, it just happened to be a woman or a horse. Someone came, was riding on a horse, whether it was a man or a woman, I don't remember the story, and was wearing this apron, was wearing this garment, and Rashi viewed this as hashkocha pratis, that if here he's struggling to understand what is the ephod, Hashem is sending him a image, better than art scroll illumination. Hashem is sending him the real thing. Here, suddenly a rider comes wearing this garment, this beautiful apron wrapped around their back, and now I understand. It's like the story with the stipler. The stipler, when he was discussing, when he was learning the sugya of Chagavim, the stipler, he had a difficulty understanding what exactly is the meaning of certain details, and there, lo and behold, the grasshopper appears right in front of him. It came to the window, and he looks in detail, and he sees exactly what he needs to see. He's finished, and the grasshopper disappears. He then goes a few lines later, wait a minute, there's another detail I forgot. He picks up his set and it comes back. That's the story. I believe they asked this Reb Chaim Kanievsky if this story is true, and he said it is true. I believe this is one of the stories that he says is true. There are a lot of stories they say that are not true, but this is a story that he claims is indeed true. So this story really has a precedent from Rashi. Rashi, when he was writing this commentary on the ephod, did not know what it was, and this person came riding on a horse wearing exactly what he describes as this garment, which is a beautiful garment that the women of nobility wore when they rode horses. He then got a taste of what it was, and he was able to use that information to decipher all the Mamar Chazal to describe it in such detail like he does over here in the parasha three times. Okay, now, it is a little bit strange, though. Think about it. That if you were to have the zechus to observe the Kohen Gadol, Kohen Gadol was walking, coming to the Beis Hamikdash, and the Kohen Gadol happened to be on duty, happened to be there, and you see him. What do you see? Kohen Gadol, you're wearing very beautiful clothing. You're wearing the me'il, it's blue, it's cheles. What's that vest you're wearing? It reminds me of a woman who was riding a horse. You get the image. I mean, to us, it doesn't mean anything because we nothing means anything to us. But if you were living, what?
Ben came after. Rusty would be able to learn that the.
Oh, that's an interesting question. So it should be Silbash, Silbash, Gever, Silbash, Isha. Obviously, it's custom made. Obviously, there are shoulder straps. There are shoulder straps. There's Avni Shoyam. It's a good question. Rashi emphasized this is a garment that's miyuchet for women.
It's not a good question because she came thousands of years after the Moshe. He wore it first.
But it seems it was worn even during the time of the Torah when the Torah was given. That I think that's a possibility. If Rashi is describing what took place 1,000 years ago, possibly this garment was a garment that existed during the time when the Torah was given by Matan Torah, and when they built the Mishkan. I'm making that assumption. Maybe you're right. Maybe it didn't exist. Maybe this garment first came into existence by women who ride horses 1,000 years later. I'm suggesting, maybe I'm wrong, is that if Rashi is making this statement, it's possible that this type of garment existed even during the time of Matan Torah amongst the Umos HaOlam. It was a big world then also. And the Umos HaOlam, they had horses, and Egypt was the place where they had horses, and Noshois and Sarois, when they ride horses, wore this type of garment. And Hashem said, you know what, I want you to take this type of garment and I want you to use it as a garment for the Kohen Gadol when he goes and does the Avod in the Beis HaMikdash. Isn't that strange to us, Haloi Davar, that when you would come and you would see the Kohen Gadol, you would be reminded of a woman riding a horse in the Beis HaMikdash? Haloi Davar? And Rashi...
Not the one of the pictures of Kodesh Kodashim.
Not the Kodesh Kodashim. Only
the
what?
Royalty at the time.
In the Beis HaMikdash.
Kruvim, not horses.
Oh, there was pictures of...
Horses? No. Nowhere does it say there were horses.
Really?
Not horses. Noshim, women, a picture, an image, though he's asking better, it's a loisasei. Lois silbash gever simlas isha. Right? I don't know the answer. Obviously the answer is this is not mamish, a garment of a woman. This is custom made with straps and a belt. It's just, it gives you the mark. But you cannot deny the fact that Rashi goes through the effort of mentioning this twice. Twice. And he doesn't even have a source for this. He says, V'libi oimer li, it's a garment, she sorois, loiv shois, when they ride horses. And then when he, in the second page, he says the same exact thing, Noshim wear this when they ride horses. Haloi Davar, what's going on over here? What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu trying to impress upon us by telling us that the Kohen Gadol, the holiest man in Klal Yisrael, he wears a garment which brings up in the mind of the average man an image of a woman riding a horse? What's going on? So I have really no clue, and I don't have a good answer. I just want to be me'orer some Amorim Chazal and allow you to fill in the dots. I have here a very good sefer called Nishmas Kol Chai. This sefer was put out by Rabbi Chil Michel Stern. And Chil Michel Stern, he collected here in this sefer all the Amorim Chazal arranged by animal. Every animal, the nature, you take, give me any animal, and it'll tell you what Chazal have to say about this animal. All of the secrets from the perspective of Chazal. So sure enough, there's an entire section on the sus. What is the significance in halach, in agada of a horse? So let me tell you a few very interesting things about a horse. And now, it doesn't fully answer the question. I don't in any way mean to say that this is going to give a satisfactory understanding, but it definitely opens up our minds to a greater appreciation of why the Kohen Gadol is wearing a garment which brings up the image of an isha riding a horse. He says here, "B'medrash talpiyos, huva davar." I'm just selecting a few little things. Davar me'anyon. I think that's very interesting. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation of this word. Me'anyon, a very interesting thing. Sheyesh besush she'ein b'chol balchai, does not exist by any other animal. Or anybody other living creature for that matter. And after the study, Google this, and this is true today, if it is, no, but it says the Medrash Talpiyos. V'hu shebelev hasus yesh etzen. It is the only creature that has a bone in its heart. Anyone familiar with this? The only creature in existence that has a bone, part of the heart is built with a bone. Human beings, it's all muscle. It's pure muscle, it's basar, it's meat. It's basar, agidin, but there are no atzamois in the heart. the only creature that has a bone in the heart, because the horse is under enormous pressure. A horse has to produce, has to produce, and needs an etzem. Shemeroiv goydlam the oimes gufam, due to their enormous height, their makeup, the oimes gufam aliba, and the pressure. The horse has to produce under a lot of pressure to race, to travel, to carry loads. Tzorech chizuk. It requires extra special fortification. Like no other creature in the world. K'mosha evarim hatzrichim latzamos. Like other evarim hatzrichim latzamos l'shem chizuk. So therefore, when Hashem created the horse, Hashem knew horse has a very difficult task in this world. Therefore, Hashem gave the horse a bone in its heart in order to mechazek its heart, so it can produce, it can do what it needs to be done. Now we can fully understand, not fully, but now it opens up a whole new understanding. What is the Kohen Gadol? What is the highlight? What is the crown jewel of the Kohen Gadol? It's the Choshen. The Choshen, the Hoya Alev Aharon. The Shemois, the Choshen HaMishpat, the Asis of Choshen Mishpat Naasei Choshev. And what do we put on the Umilesva Miluas Aven? Arba Turim Aven, Tur Oidin Pitavarekas, all of these stones. The Hoavonim Tiena Al Shemois Bnei Yisrael, Shteim Esrei Al Shemois, Sam Pitu Choshem. And this Aaron carries on his heart. For Hoya Alev Aaron. The heart of Aaron carries the burden of Lagans Klal Yisrael. His heart is like no other heart in the world. Just like the horse has a heart that is under enormous pressure, it has a burden to carry, a load to carry, a job to perform, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu went and gave that horse. Hashem gave that horse an extra special heart that has a bone that's strong to carry its mission. The Kohen Gadol needs a very strong heart. Tzorchei Amcha Yisrael Merubim. Klal Yisrael has a lot of problems, a lot of needs, a lot of tzorchim. That heart that carries the Shiftei Ka has to be an extra special heart to symbolize the koyach, the intensity of that heart that is necessary, the levush that he wears to fasten. What is the ephod? The ephod basically is what is fastening the choshen on the Kohen Gadol. This from the straps above, the chains come down and hold the choshen in place, and from the bottom there are the psil techeles, which fastens the lower portion of the choshen against the ephod. He needs a strong heart. The strongest heart among the Bria is the horse. It has the etzem. Nimela, the levush, the dugma, the tsur of the Kohen Gadol is a horse. Is a person riding a horse. We want to bring up that image to impress upon us the chizuk halev that is necessary to carry Klal Yisrael through history, through the year.
So what's the significance of the sorus?
The female. I told you it's not a complete answer. I'm aware of that. It's right. It's not a complete answer. Why only female women? Why not males? I don't know the answer. But I think to some degree this opens up a fascinating idea. That a horse is a unique heart, and the choshen, the purpose of the ephod is to capture the choshen which rests upon the heart. He needs a strong heart. It definitely captures at least a fraction of the idea. Now let me give you another chazal. We're not even finished. There are numerous other chazal which fit very well into this idea. Another idea. Okay. A lot of chazal. I want to focus on. There's one particular one that I really that is very interesting, and this is. Let me read you what it says in the Shach. Okay, the Shach. Read you the Shach b'shem the Kolbay. If you want to look it up, it's in Yeridaya, Simin Kuf Tzadi Tes. The Shach writes the following thing in the name of the Kolbo. We are aware that when a woman comes out of a mikvah, she's supposed to look up to Shemayim. This we don't know what this means. This is mystical, but there's such a concept. When a woman comes out of the mikvah, the first thing that she sees will have an effect on the yoifi, the beauty of her child that will come from being with her husband. Okay, there's such a thing to this, and therefore there's a meaning by some women when they come out of mikvah, they look up to the sky, they should see ke'etzem ha'shamayim la'toyar. Okay, whatever these things mean. The Gemara has a story where Rabbi Yochanan, he was a beautiful person. He sat outside the mikvah. He sat outside the mikvah l'shem shamayim. When women come out of the mikvah, they should look at him. The first thing they should see is his yoifi, and that will bring into Klal Yisrael beautiful children. His friend said to him, Rabbi Yochanan, you're not afraid of the blog. You're not afraid what they're going to say about you. You're standing outside the mikvah and the women. So he says, everyone knows that by me, women are like a piece of wood. Okay, it's not. There's no Yetzirah. Everyone knows. Even the worst of the worst, bloggers are not going to chop it with me because they know like a piece of wood to me. And therefore, I'm doing it l'shem shamayim. What? He danced with the kala. Okay, this is the Gemara. Okay, whatever the Gemara means. Okay, so exactly. Now let me elaborate. Now the Shach, okay, Rabbi said, the Shach quotes this Chazal, and the Shach elaborates. And listen to what the Shach says in the name of the Kolbo. Okay, this is really off the charts. The Chayin Motzinut, but it's in the big books, you know, those big, big books, the Shulchan Aruch, the Aradei, it's there, it's right there, in the Hilchas Nida, Kuf Tzadi Tes, B'Shem HaKolboi. She'isha, a woman, She'paygas Sus, a woman, who comes out of the mikvah, and the first thing she sees is a horse. You can be certain that she will merit the following six things. Boneha yihyu no'im bidiburim. They will be beautiful bidiburim. They will be speakers. They'll have the koyach hadibur. Shaimim umevinim. They will listen well and they will understand. Loimdim Torah, they'll learn Torah. Ve'enam mishtakhin, they will not forget. Umematin b'sheina, they'll be like a horse and they won't sleep very much. They'll have a productive life. V'loyoid ela she'imasan muteles al habriyos. They'll have the fear factor. People will be afraid of them. V'divrehem nishma'im, and their words will be heard, will be well received. And he says, the Shach says, B'Shem HaKabo, if you see there's such a person out there in the world that has all of these qualities, you can be certain that when his mother came out of mikvah before he was conceived, the first thing his mother saw was a horse. When his mother came out of mikvah, she saw this. Now he elaborates and he says, the horse has good midos. All of these midos, okay, we don't have time to elaborate, but basically there are some very bad things about a horse here, but there's some very good things about a horse. Keyesh v'yesh, and all of these things are all of these midos are the qualities of a horse. A masan would tell us some we understand, some we don't understand. We understand a masan would tell us alabrios. We understand that they don't sleep. A horse barely sleeps. It says over here that a horse is a good speaker. Maybe I don't know what that means. Compared to other animals, devar of nishmayim, his words are heard. It says horses are good listeners. Okay, could be. Whatever, we have amuna in Chazal that the horse has these qualities, and this is simon. Now think about it. Here is an Isha. Look what we have here. An Isha, it's coming in contact with a horse. When does an Isha come in contact with a horse? A woman who rides a horse. Right? Rashi, the Sarois, Reich Vaisala Susim, a Noshim who ride horses. Here is another example of a woman seeing a horse. She comes out of the mikvah, she's in contact with this. And what is the merit? It's a simin toy when she's in a state of tahara. When she's coming out of the mikvah, lifnei Hashem titaru, in a state of tahara, what happens? The kindalach, a zeichet to all of these beautiful midos. What is the Kohen Gadol doing? The Kohen Gadol is going lifnai v'lifnim in order to do what? Lifnei Hashem titaru. The Kohen Gadol is begeder in Isha, is begeder the Isha that's bringing tahara to Klal Yisrael. And when the Kohen Gadol, when he goes there, he's dressed in the levush. It's the levush that he's dressed is the levush of an isha that's pogea besus. For what suchus? Who are the kindalach of the Kohen Gadol? Klal Yisrael. The Talmidim are the Bonim. The Kohen Gadol is going to Klal Yisrael for his children, the Shift they call the Bnei Yisrael that are etched into the Choshen, etched into the Eifot. These are his children. What greater bracha could the Kohen Gadol bring for Klal Yisrael than these six things? The Klal Yisrael should be zoicha to the bracha of Noyim b'diburim, Shoimim u'mevinim, Loimdim Torah v'einim b'shtakhim, u'mematim b'sheinov, what greater bracha? Perhaps there is something here, the Dvarim Begav. There's something over here that is with precision that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the Levush, the Eifod of the Kohen Gadol to be in the Demus, in the Dugma of the Dugma of an Isha Recheves Alasus, to bring this bracha to Klal Yisrael. In a matziv of oilamin hamikvah, a matziv of tahara, just like the woman she goes to mikvah, what the Kohen Gadol is doing for Klal Yisrael. Now, there's a very obvious connection besides these two connections, and that is Miriam. Moshe Rabbeinu, he sings a shira. Oz Yosher Moshe v'nei Yisrael, and the shira goes on and on and on, psukim after psukim after psukim, and then comes along Miriam, and Miriam says, "I don't need all of this." Let's just get to the essence. Vatan lahem Miriam vatoimar ashiru lahashem ki goyo goa sus v'roichvoi roma vayam. The ikar shira of Miriam is sus v'roichvoi roma vayam. Who are the builders of Klal Yisrael? Who are the three people who died b'neshika? Who are really the foundation of Klal Yisrael? Three siblings: Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Moshe is the one who dressed Aaron. L'chavoydu l'sefares v'ato hakle v'lecha. Moshe is the one that dressed Aaron. Aaron is the one that goes in l'fnai v'lefnim. But what about Miriam? Miriam lost out. How did Miriam lose out? Miriam didn't lose out. Miriam is the levush itself. The levush that the Kohen Gadol wears is the levush of Miriam. Miriam is the isha shepagas shereches alasus. She is the sorois that ride on the horse. She's the one that appreciated Kadosh Baruch Hu by describing Kadosh Baruch Hu ashiru laHashem ki goa. Well, I'm forgetting what I'm forgetting. Sus v'roichvoy roma vayom. She appreciated the koyach of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Can you have to go? I tell you, I'm not going to all the details. But she could have repeated anything that Moshe Rabbeinu said. She selected this. Obviously, this is the essence. Now, why is that the essence? That's not for now. Okay, that's a different topic of discussion. But she captures the greatness of Yitzias Mitzrayim is described in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sus v'roichvoy roma vayom. The koyach that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away the gaiva of Mitzrayim. The horse is the most, as it says over here, is a creature which is the most arrogant kavayachal of the animals. But Hashem is ki go'o sus v'rochvo roma vayom. The gaiva of Mitzrayim has been destroyed, but instead the gaiva, the kiddush, has been transferred to the one who deserves it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, the details are not important in this sense. I told you I'm not giving you deals, but the point over here is, you see over here there's a connection. There's an obvious connection which can be developed each according to his own liking. Is that Miriam is the Isha that is Recheves al Hasus. She understands the horse. And this is the Levush of Aaron. Why does Aaron need the Levush of Hasus? Because Aaron brings with him into the Kodesh Haka, into the Avoida, he brings Miriam. Because Miriam is a Shutif in the Binyan of Klal Yisrael. In fact, she was the one that probably from all of the siblings gets the most credit. She's the one that convinced Amram, you mean Poiresh, from Yocheved. You're even worse than Paro. Paro. Amram. So who was the one? Who was the responsible for the lade of Moshe Rabbeinu? Miriam. She was for her. If not for her, there would not have been a Klal Yisrael. She said to Amram, you're even worse than Parah. Parah was Gezer al Azacham. You're Gezer al Azacham v'alanekeves. So Amram said, you're right. Vayikach vayelech ish mi beis levi vayikach espas levi. It was Miriam's doing. She was the inspiration. And that came Moshe Rabbeinu.
That's why she's called a Nevi'ah.
She's a Nevi'ah.
They didn't go anywhere until she said okay.
So doesn't she deserve at this moment we're now finally Klal Yisrael reach to Shleimus, we have a base Hamikdash, and we have over here a Kohen Gadol, doesn't she deserve honorable mention? Miriam? Absolutely. Miriam is the one that said Ashir Lashem, because the meat of Gaiva is the meat of a sus. He writes that over here. The first thing he writes, all the creature, the one that has the meat of Gaiva, is Lusus Yesh Techuna Shel Gaiva. Uchmashakosav Hagro. Shesus Geosh Bibehemos. It is the most arrogant of the animals. The Yesh Vi Remes Lzemia Posa Ki Go'o Ki Go'o Go'o Sus Verochvo. It's this Midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the Sus. She transferred the Gaiva of the Sus to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that deserves. He is the greatest of them all. It was Miriam that captured, and that is captured in the Levush of the Kohen Gadol when he goes in to the Beis HaMikdash.
We stretch this a bit into Tzava, which is the Parsha Purim. Kach es halavush.
Yes, asus. Ooh, kach es halavush. Beautiful. Kach es halavush. Yes, asus. Kasher dibarta. Ah, there's definitely dvarim begav. Dvarim begav. We have to figure out what that means. Okay, the deal you say this. Okay, let's go to one more var. One more. Let's go to at least one more var. Let's see which time we have. When our Kadosh Baruch Hu gives the tzivui to make the begadim. There's an unusual expression. The expression used to describe the begadim are the heim yikru es hazahav. The eila habegadim asher yasu choishen v'efudum il luchosonis tashpeitz mitznevis yavneid v'yasu v'dikol shavu nechicha ulovan v'lachanuli. The heim, they. Who are they? The heim yikru es hazahav yes adchilus v'sagmon v'yaslasuji v'yasashesh. Who are the heim? Heim seemingly means. Oy Rashi says, Oy some chachmei lev sheyasu habegadim yikablu min hamisnadvim es hazov v'es hatachelus lasos mehem es habegadim. Today, this would never happen. Such a pasuk, impossible. Today, if you raise money, the money has there has to be accountability. There has to be transparency. The money has to go into an account. Has the check has to be made out to an organization. You have to have a tax exempt number. The money goes into an account, and the account is administered by a committee, and no money leaves the account unless there are at least three signatures. And there has to be a committee who decides what we're going to do, and then there's a subcommittee and another subcommittee, and the people who do the work, the people who end up doing the craftsmen or doing the work, are probably 10 layers removed from the people who gave the money. If you donate the money to an organization, and the organization is well protected with many layers of security, and then there are committees how we're going to spend the money, who we're going to hire, and until the workers get their check, it has gone probably through many, many layers. Donation here, there, all the way until it trickles down to the people who get the money. And the Torah here says that's not the way it works in the Beis HaMikdash. And in fact, this is actually what the innovation during the time, the Parsha Shkolim, this was the innovation. They made a pushka box. The first time, because it used to be, the Pasuk of here says it's specifically in regard to the clothing. The craftsman, the tailor, who's going to make the clothing for the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyot, they're going to do the fundraising. They're going to go from house to house and say, you know, I'm making clothing for the Kohen Gadol. You have some wool, maybe some linen. You have some gold. You have some silver. I need some different materials. The people who are actually going to do the labor are the ones who are going to do the fundraising to get the materials. Today, you would right away suspect, oh, you're taking something for you in the pocket. You're taking for yourself a couple of dollars there. Einochinami. There had to be trust. There had to be a very great degree of trust. And because we know later on that this trust was not always 100%, this system was changed in the time of the Sefer Melachim was changed, where no longer was the money collected directly by the world. Yeah?
Moshe had to make an accounting.
Moshe for the Mishkan, but not for the clothing. It says here, Veheim.
Okay, but, even Moshe Rabbeinu was accountable.
Okay, Moshe was accountable. That's correct with the Vavi Hamudim. But yet there is still an emphasis. There is an there's an unusual pasuk here. There's an unusual pasuk here. If the Torah would not write this, you wouldn't blink. You would just assume it was done the same way it's done today. We would just say the Eile Halgad Mesher Yasu Chayshen the Eifon the Eil the Chasonis Tashpeit Tzeis Avnei the Sudus Lai Nachichul Levanu Chanali. Period. We're done. Next pasuk the Yosu Etso Eifon. This pasuk K is to 100% superfluous. What difference does it make how they collected the money, who got the money, and then the entire process? And especially today, we wouldn't do this. We wouldn't let the people who are doing the work make the collection because we would suspect that they're taking something for themselves. Under the table, they're taking something, yeah? That was a new innovation late in the game. Late in the game, all the way at the very end, after there was a lot of corruption. Exactly what Ulmer Farsh said, until that point in time when everything was a renovation, the workers said, "Ah, we're going to do this," and they raised the money, they did everything themselves. And that turned out to become a disaster. So the question is, it was a disaster at that point in time, so what was the Havamina? What? Teretz is in the beginning, obviously there was something to it. There's a different system. Today, we're so brainwashed, we can't even imagine there being a different system. But the Pasuk here emphasizes, it doesn't emphasize this when it comes to the building of the Mishkan, doesn't make any mention of that. The only place where it makes mention that the people who make the clothing are going to be the ones who do the actual collection is only by the Begadim. And the question is why? This Pasuk can have been omitted, we wouldn't blink. The fact that it's here is coming to teach us something very important. What is that important message? And the message is, clothing represent a person's character. Midos. Clothing, every piece of garment is custom. Every person is a different size, different shape, different form. Unique clothing is always, in the eyes of Chazal, represents a person's midos. The shirt represents one midah. The hat represents another midah. The shoes represent one midah. Clothing represent a person's character, a person's midos. When it comes... What?
The calling came, he had to change out of his regular weekday.
Yes, of course.
Wherever...
Okay, that's a different question. But when you do the avod, you wear the clothing. Clothing represents a person's midos. The mussar here is when it comes to midos, when a person wants to perfect himself, to be a better person with quality character, sterling character, it's not something someone can do for you. It's not something where you go to the store, you stand, and someone will just come and dress you. When it comes to clothing, the Torah emphasizes when you come to make clothing, the Torah is coming to emphasize when it comes to the fashioning of clothing, you have to do every detail of the process. The heim yikhu esaza, even though we hear the pasuk, it's the craftsmen who are making for the kohanim, but still the emphasis is the ones who are making the clothing. You make clothing for yourself also sometimes. And maybe the craftsmen with the Koyim HaKoyim, they were the craftsmen who made the clothing for themselves. When it comes to making clothing, it is the only place where the Torah emphasizes you yourself go and retrieve the raw materials and cut it and fashion it from the grassroots up. Because when it comes to midos tovos, there's no easy way. There are no shortcuts. You can't go watch some video on YouTube telling you how to be a good person. The way you're a good person, the way you have sterling character is practicing it, going through the process, going through the steps, dealing with people, dealing with the raw material. Every little detail is absolutely necessary in perfecting the kalim, the clothing to which you will appear, which you dress yourself and you conduct yourself and you deal with other people. All right, that's it. Time is up. Have a wonderful Shabbat.